This is an extemporaneous Christian Science prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website mbeinstitute.org. Of the two kinds of prayer treatments, preventative and curative, this prayer treatment is intended to be emphasizing the preventative, although it may also include some aspects of the curative. The primary topic is day. The first thing that comes to thought about day is that it is an opportunity to take a fresh look at our life that is independent of anything that may have been experienced prior to this moment. The main feature of preventative prayer treatment is to build a fortress of protection so that one will be immune to any and all forms of evil. This, of course, includes any and all forms of discord. And to further continue our guard by utilizing moments that otherwise would be wasted. Mary Baker Eddy tells us that the difference between success and failure is often related directly to how the moments are utilized. A moment is defined as the smallest measurement of time. We have an innumerable number of moments every single day. Are we going to use them productively, or are we going to lose them indefinitely? It's an easy formula, but the discipline required depends on the dedication one has to fulfill the purpose of preventative prayer treatment. Mary Baker Eddy tells us that we are barraged constantly with universal beliefs, and the best way to prevent them from having any impact on us whatsoever is to form a perfect model in thought and to hold to that model no matter what comes our way. Let's begin our thought of day and the newness which is inherent in the very term day, the same way Mary Baker Eddy begins the textbook with three introductory quotes. 1. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Jesus. 2. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Shakespeare. 3. Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. One can have a lot of productive fun in considering the ramifications of each of these three quotes, if they are applied to our individual situation. Life is living, not procrastinating, not delayed, not slow, but dynamic. Therefore, one must live with vim, vigor, and vitality. Otherwise, one is not living. On page 587, Mary Baker Eddy defines good, G-O-O-D, as a title for God in the following way. God, Spirit, Omnipotence, Omniscience, Omnipresence, and Omniaction. Contemplate the fact that every action is an action of God, because God is all action, omni-action, the one, only, and all action. There is no other action. Omni excludes everything else that appears to be action. This declares that anything besides the action of God is unreal, absolutely fantasy, a fake, without any foundation or basis. This gives one the authority to prevent any kind of accident whatsoever. So one of the things that's very appropriate to state in a prayer treatment that is intended to be preventative is to state that there can be no accident, because the only action is the action of God, and God is divine principle. Divine principle is harmonious, balanced, and therefore eliminates the possibility of chaos. Accident is tantamount to chaos. Harmony is tantamount to its opposite and prevents chaos. Therefore, we cannot be involved in a single activity that includes any kind of imbalance, discord, or chaos of any type, nature, or form whatsoever. We can only experience harmony and bliss, coordinated, properly sequenced activities that are dynamic, and yet without any form of deviation from perfection. The only substance is spirit. Spirit is flawless. Why? Because God is mind, and mind is omniscient, which is omni-intelligence, omni-wisdom, and omni-knowing. God is also all faculty and all facility, all functionality. And if you put these thoughts together, you will see that it's impossible to have anything that is contrary to divine principles, qualities of balance and harmony. Therefore, this day will not, cannot, and ever could include anything unlike the harmony and balance of divine principle. And because life is dynamic, there can be no delays, no slowness, but only dynamic progress, which is on the path of infinite progression, which is a goal of concrete being. Isaiah tells us, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, there a little. Our motivation is to gain a little bit every moment, just a tiny little bit, which will give us the effect of compound concord. And that means if we measured it, it would not be a straight line, but a geometric progression, all pointing to the infinitude of infinite mind. In proportion as we realize that the only substance is spirit, and that spirit is the antipode of the belief of matter, that matter is opaque, and therefore spirit, its opposite, is absolutely transparent, and therefore totally flawless, and also that leads to the realization that it is transparent. Transparency enables reflection. Therefore, we reflect the flawless, transparent, reflective nature of spirit. And we reflect every good activity out into the atmosphere of divine, heavenly, universal thought. And this is fact. It's not theory. A universal belief is a theory that is the opposite of reality. And this is what we are guarding against in all three areas of individual, collective, and universal. We also want to include all humanity in our prayer treatments, indicating that this applies to all humanity. It's not just for me or for you or for our friends. It is for all humanity. It's for the benefit of every idea of God. Ideas are without limit. They are without any kind of limit in any direction or any intensity. Mind is the only source. This is the infinite divine mind of God, which is our mind, because there is only one mind. It's not ours to own, it's ours to reflect. And we can reflect the quantity to which we give up any limiting thought that prevents the concept of infinity. Soul is the way we identify. Mary Baker Eddy defines spiritual sight as spiritual discernment. Are we able to tell the difference between truth and error? If so, then we have the opportunity to exercise our spiritual discernment. How about hearing? Do we have spiritual understanding? If so, when we listen, we're going to be listening for the spiritual truth, not a material-based representation of sound. How about feeling? What are we doing with our consciousness? Is our consciousness divine? Divine means perfect. Are we only permitting into consciousness the perfect facts and not material so-called theory? How about smell? What does it smell like? What is the characteristics? Are we permitting our spiritual intuition to analyze the characteristics to make sure that we're focusing on the spiritual intuition of perfection, which is what spirit is, flawless? And how about taste? This is like icing on the cake, assuming you like icing. It's supposed to be the creme de la creme. It is defined by Mary Baker Eddy as the relish of truth. After we do all of the other things of seeing, hearing, feeling, and smell, then we're ready to take a bite. How does it taste? The more senses we utilize of the five spiritual senses, the more accurate will be our conclusion on whether or not we say, yes, I'm accepting it into my consciousness, or no, it is rejected because it's a diversion. It's something less than the pure idea of God. This is not an angel message. This is an attempt of evil to work its foot into my door so that it can push the door open and get all the way in and just totally compromise the purity of my consciousness. The consciousness of God is what I can reflect. We have the ability to do it because all ability is in mind, and we have the capacity to reflect the ability of divine mind, the perfect mind, not a brain, not a mortal mind, not matter, but the real mind, the divine, perfect mind, the mind of God. The same mind that Jesus referred to when he said, "I and my Father are one." The same mind that Mary Baker Eddy utilized when she was healing instantaneously. The same protection that Jesus was utilized when he walked through the crowd unseen when they were attacking him. The same protection of a family that I know of that had 4 children, 3 girls and 1 boy, who had 100% perfect attendance for all 12 years of their school that they attended. A school that had never had a single student that had perfect attendance for 12 years. And they had an entire family of 4 children that had perfect attendance. Totally skipped childhood diseases that were so prevalent with all the other families. The beauty of Christian Science is that it is a science and therefore can be practiced by anyone and everyone with success. Einstein made the statement after thoroughly studying Christian Science, and he said, "Science without religion is lame, and religion without science is blind." He recognized that Christian Science was exactly the perfect combination of science and Christianity. He realized that Christianity healed, not the Christianity that's been practiced since 325 AD up until 1866 and remains to be practiced by almost every church that is in existence today. That is Christianity without its most important element, which is healing, both preventative and curative. That has been assigned to the medical profession. And we don't even want to think about how many lives have been lost, let alone how many healings are absent from the practice of medicine. However, it's important to understand that everyone has their own salvation to work out. We can't work it out for them, nor should we even be involved in trying to influence anyone in what their personal, individual decisions are about their life. Everyone has the right to pursue whatever they feel is the most advantageous for their own well-being. Our concern is our own consciousness and what we do with it, and it should be to cultivate within ourselves our own self-improvement, not trying to be concerned about the improvement of someone that we should not have any concern with. If we have children, or anyone that we're responsible for, that's a different story. That's a part of our responsibility. Something else that was very important with that family that had perfect attendance with all of their children, and that is that they were exempted from taking classes that had to do with study of the body or study of diseases. Anything at all that had to do with drugs or vaccines or anything like that, they were exempted. They never had to worry about correcting it because they never took it in the beginning. Frederick L. Rawson is a true genius of Christian Science. He was an electrical engineer. People came to him from all around the world to solve their electrical problems that they could not solve with other consultants and in-house staff. And he was located in the UK. So no matter where they were, they had to travel to him, because this was over 100 years ago, and there was not the telecommunications that we have available to us today. And also, they didn't have the jet airplanes. So there was sometimes up to a month of travel in order to get to him, and a month to get home. And they may only spend one day with him. But that was the investment that was required, because they didn't have the benefit of the technology that we have. What kind of progress did Frederick L. Rawson make in order to deserve the title of genius? As Mary Baker Eddy Institute defines genius, it's someone who has a worthwhile project that benefits everyone concerned that is affected by the project. And if it's a broad enough thing, like Walmart did, it affected all of their customers worldwide. And what was that? 100% customer satisfaction. Bring anything back anytime for any reason, and we'll gladly give you your money back. What kind of customer service should we have with our prayer treatment? We should look in the mirror. Are we loving our neighbor as ourself? The golden rule is the core of Christian Science. Love is defined as motherly, nurturing everything about our own character and those we're responsible for to bring it to fulfillment. Principle was explained, soul has been explained, spirit and mind, and how about, and life has been explained. What about truth? Truth is distinguishing the difference between truth and error, between fact and fiction. How about our motive? Is it based on the golden rule? Or is it egotistical, selfish? How do we conduct ourselves when we go out in public? Mary Baker Eddy asked one of her students who came to her to help solve a problem that he didn't seem to be able to be on the right track to, and not making the progress he should make in his healing work. And she first of all noticed, without even talking to him, she had a sense that he was not loving his neighbor as himself. So she asked him, when you are walking out in public, what do you do? He was silent. He had no idea why she would even ask such a question. You know, if he was walking to another office or something to have a meeting, or if he was going to his car to go home, or go to his car to go on an errand for the business or whatever, that's what he was doing. She said, are you a Christian Scientist? Because he didn't say anything. He was just silent after the question. So after pausing for a while, she asked him, are you a Christian Scientist? That was the wake-up call. He immediately knew what he should be doing, but he was doing nothing for his neighbor. Nothing. He was not living the golden rule. She has pointed out in her writings that we should be always alert to the need of our brethren, which is everywhere, everyone, under all circumstances. Everyone, everywhere, under all circumstances, we are in the presence of our brethren, either visibly or mentally. How about contemplating some of the things that we've had come to us as thoughts in this prayer treatment? How about accident? Are we alert to any accident that may be occurring before our very eyes, or maybe it already occurred and we are viewing the situation after the fact? What do we do about it? We should do about it the same thing that we discussed in this prayer treatment. That God is omni-action. The only action that could be real is the action of God. And God is omni-intelligent, omni-wise, and omni-knowing. And God is spirit, which is flawless. So it makes sense that the intelligence, the wisdom, and the knowing of God, and the pureness, the flawless nature of spirit, which is the only substance and principle, is harmony and balance. I didn't mention it, but it's also structure. And love is nurturing. Could love be responsible for an accident or a principle or mind or spirit? How about soul? How are we identifying things? Are we looking through the lens of spirit? We discuss life. Life is the dynamics of exercising the qualities of God. We talked about truth, distinguishing between fact and fiction. We've covered all seven of the synonymous terms. Is there any possibility of an accident occurring based on those seven qualities of God? There can't be any deviation from perfection. So there can't be any chaos. Therefore, there can be no accident. Our eyes are trying to deceive us, to make us believe that there's a power that is greater than the omnipotence of God. The definition I read about God was spirit, omnipotence, omniscient, omnipresent, and omni-action. So what is the action that could have created an accident? A false belief. The fact that there's only one mind, and it's the mind of God, is the truth. The theory that there is a second mind that is chaotic, made out of matter, and that an individual's body is of the substance of matter and therefore can be injured, or that it can die. The only thing that can die is a false belief. The only thing that can be injured is a misunderstanding that there's only one mind, and it is protected by divine love. A mother stands for the love surrounding the mother's activities. One of the qualities that's attributed to a male is protection. But real protection is when the male is following the qualities of God, reflecting the qualities of God. Every single individual that's involved in what appears to be an accident is under the protection of love and cannot be injured inconvenienced, or die. Because there's no death in life. Either life is real or death is real. Which is it? We have been given heaven. It's within our consciousness. Are we going to peel back the onion so we can see it? Are we going to follow the laws of the universe, which are the laws of God, so we can be involved in it? Like the third quote at the beginning of the textbook, Mary Baker Eddy says, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere." Don't you think she's referring not to God having ears, but that the laws of God are omnipresent, and she was in alignment with the laws of God? Just like when Jesus said, "I and my Father are one." He was in alignment with the laws of God. Every time he saw someone that had a problem, and he was involved in healing them, did he think about them as having an ailment? Or did he think about them as being perfect? Mary Baker Eddy says that we need to determine the evil, expose it, and eradicate it, reason it away with the truth, and stick to the truth, and keep repeating the truth until the healing is realized. Our brain, to belief, has been inundated for our entire visible life with theories of false belief. We have to take a stand for truth and feed it the truth. Feed our consciousness the truth. Eradicate from it any evil, which is anything unlike God. Evil with a D in front of it is devil. So it's both a devil and it is evil to permit it to get a foot in the door of our consciousness. A popular image of Jesus is him standing in a white robe knocking on a door. He's knocking on our door of consciousness. Just like Mary Baker Eddy's writings are knocking on our door of consciousness. Are we going to let the truth in? Or are we going to just go along our merry way, conducting ourselves in the deviation of ups and downs from the truth, and just keep tolerating it because we're able to maybe tolerate it for now, for this moment? Or are we going to put a stop to it right this moment? Are we going to deny that an accident that we might see or see the evidence of, that it can be true because it's not anything that God would create? What do you think would happen to everybody that was involved in that so-called event if they had the same kind of thinking that is discussed here in this prayer treatment? Do you think that would have an impact on the so-called accident and the people involved and the property that's involved? Anything at all that's involved with the accident or with the belief of the accident? It would do what Frederick L. Rawson learned how to do, to heal by going back in time. If everyone was spiritual enough to do that, they would be able to go back in time with everybody involved in that situation before a so-called accident happened and put some protective prayer in there and prevent it from coming about. Frederick L. Rawson explained that our entire so-called material life is a movie. The President of the United States keeps telling everybody that we're seeing a movie, Are we going to believe him? Those are words of wisdom when he says, this is a movie. He says the words central casting continuously. He said, see that central casting general over there? He said that just recently. Central casting is a company that hires out actors en masse. If you need 1,000 actors to fill up an auditorium, they'll provide it to you for the one event. They're people that paid to do what they're hired to do. If they're just to go to walk into that auditorium and fill it up and scream for, if it's a sport event, you know, scream for the people that they're voting for, that they are, you know, their home, you know, their, you know, their sports people that are on the team. If it's a football game, when they score a football, you know, they score a touchdown, or a basketball game, they, you know, the basketball goes through the hoop at the last second before the end of the game and wins the game. They're paid to scream, stand up and scream with excitement. They took movies of central casting coming across the border. That doesn't mean that the event didn't really happen, but in many cases it's used by our president after the fact to show what it was before he stopped it with his staff and all the other participants. Frederick L. Rawson says our entire life, based from a material viewpoint, is a movie. It's already done. The movie is already complete. Which part of it do we want to look at? That is why he was able to heal back in time. He understood that it was a movie, and therefore was able to go back in time before the, or just as the illness or whatever the problem was that occurred, and correct it at that moment. He did it over 500 times, documented it. He mastered it. It wasn't a one-off. It wasn't a miracle that he did. He understood it. He understood the science of it. In his book, Treatment or Healing by True Prayer, there's a chapter called Applied Treatment. He lists 1,315 different healings. And the kind of, or this is the thought that is required to heal 1,315 different things. We have it all broken down on the website, alphabetized, so you can immediately go to any one that you want to. However, you are warned and cautioned to never read the chapter from beginning to end. It is to be used as a reference only for the ailment that you want to cure at the moment. Otherwise, you may as well go to med school and read a medical dictionary and fill your thought with all of the diseases that doctors do when they go to med school. Einstein said you cannot heal a problem by approaching the solution on the same level as where you became aware that there was a problem. You have to be at a different level, because the view is different when you're very close to the trees than if you get back and look at the forest. There are four levels of consciousness. You cannot be on the same level of consciousness as where the problem occurred. You have to be on one of the other three levels. That level could be lower or it could be higher, but you have to be on a different level. Otherwise, you can't see the correct perspective of the problem to heal it. Preventative. So very important. We have to use the vocabulary that affirms the purpose of the prayer. And you have to repeat it to keep it in thought, to keep it in consciousness. That is preventative prayer. And it's so valuable to use extemporaneous for yourself. And just let the thoughts flow like a river. If you've ever heard of Bruce Lee, he was the most advanced martial artist of all time. He was dimensions above everyone else. Dimensions. Joe Louis, the famous heavyweight boxer of the world for, I think it was 12 years. And I don't watch boxing, but it was on something that I saw about Bruce Lee just last night. And he watched Bruce Lee train. And after Bruce Lee was done training and he was ready to leave the room, he said these words, "You don't fight. You disappear." Five words. Five words, and he summarized exactly how Bruce Lee trained. He was never in conflict with anyone. He was considered the most dangerous man in the world. And yet he was never in a fight. He always disappeared. He moved away from where the other person was trying to strike or to grab. He fought people that were 500 pounds and all muscle. They couldn't touch him. They could not touch him because he knew where they were going to be, and he moved out of the way before they even started their move. Because he trained not for conflict, but how to eliminate conflict. That's exactly how we need to train our consciousness. How to eliminate conflict by not being there. Not fight with error, but disappear so error cannot even touch us. It might swing, but we're not going to be there. Bruce Lee called it being like water. Water doesn't fight the rocks that are sticking up. It goes around it. Well, if the rock is too low and the water is too high, it'll go over the top of it. But basically, it does not try to go through it. It goes around it. And as a result, the rock is smoothed over by something that you can squeeze in your hand, and it becomes nothing. It disappears from your finger and thumb that's squeezing it. It disappears. That's the way we should fight with evil. Don't fight it. Disappear. Have your thought on the consciousness of God. Perfection. The flawless nature of spirit, the omni-intelligence and wisdom and knowing of mind, the spiritual nature of the five senses, seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and taste, the perfection of divine principle that is harmonious and balanced. It's all within a spiritual structure of protection and a life that is living the qualities of God. Not ego. Humility. I read a quote not long ago that it said, when you pass on, you can take everything you want to with you. If it is what you've given away. And anything you've taken, you have to leave behind. Isn't that the golden rule? Isn't that what we do when we treat others the way we want to be treated? We give them everything that they need, including thinking of them as the image and likeness of God? Don't we want people to think of us in a perfect way as opposed to an aggressive, abrasive way? How are we thinking about others? Are we expecting people to think about us in a different, less wholesome way than we want to be thought of? We have an opportunity, because what we give away is what is ours forever, even to take with us. Wherever we go, it's with us, because it's within our consciousness. If you're really giving out of love, it's always with you. If you're giving out of ego because you want recognition for something, even if you give money away, you want recognition for it? If you build a library, do you want recognition for it? Do you want to have your name on the library? Carnegie Hall, everyone knows who gave that to the city of New York, because the name is on it. He wanted his name on it. It was wonderful that what he did, but if he would have done one more little thing and left his name off of it, it would have been better. We need to be humble and not ego-oriented. Everything we do, if we want our label on it, then we're driving a wedge between us and spirit. Spirit is giving credit to God. If we do something really wonderful, are we eager to take credit for it? Mary Baker Eddy says that we cannot be grateful for anything if we're not grateful for the qualities of God. That's what gratitude is. It's not taking credit, it's giving credit. The greatest leaders give credit to the people that work for them, not take the credit themselves. If you want someone to really get involved in doing a project that needs to be done, give them the opportunity to come up with the idea. Instead of dictating it to them, give them the opportunity to come up with the idea on their own. Then they will really go after it. If you say, well, you got to do this, this, and this, and I want it done by this time, what kind of a limited attitude are you creating for them? Creating for the project. You're limiting the project because you're limiting it to your own ideas. If you give someone else the opportunity to be creative, just maybe you will be demonstrating some humility. Preventative is so important. That's the most important kind of prayer treatment anybody can ever administer. Because then there is no curative to be concerned with. Because you're going to prevent it. Even if it already occurred and it's a problem, you should go back to before it became a problem and treat it back in time. That's another way to look at a preventative treatment. Treating something that already occurred, going back in time to treat it. We have all of Frederick L. Rosen's writings on our website that we're aware of that exist. Here are three authors that had 15-minute appointments. And by the end of the 15 minutes, the healing was complete. They are. The first one that has already been discussed, Frederick L. Rosen. Second one, Wentworth Winslow. A third one, Joel Goldsmith. All 15-minute appointments. all had the healing complete by the end of the 15 minutes. Wentworth Winslow is the only one that has mentioned the number of specific years that he was in practice, and that was 35 years. In fact, I don't think that was at the end of his practice. That was a statement that he made sometime before the end of his practice. And we know that Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy both had instantaneous healings. The last 101 pages of the textbook, which is a 700-page book, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, includes testimonies from 85 people who testified to 486 different healings. That was ones that they experienced. And they state that it all came from reading the textbook. Now, obviously, it's not a cursory reading. It was a very serious study. But everything has been healed, including death, sin, sickness, disease, everything. And now we know that one of them, at least, was able to go back in time and heal. He said they used to teach in the UK that there was no time. But over the years, they gave up the truth and started teaching theory that time is an important part of life. And we all pretty much believe it and are limited by it. This extemporaneous prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, website mbeinstitute.org, will close with this scientific statement of being by Mary Baker Eddy. If any thought occurs after that, it will be tacked on at the end, after the word amen is stated. Here it is, the scientific statement of being by Mary Baker Eddy. There is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. For God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material. He is spiritual. Amen. Here's a couple of thoughts that I would like to tack on to the end here. On page 146 of the textbook, Mary Baker Eddy says that she has reduced divine metaphysics to a system. Divine metaphysics is Christian Science. In other words, she includes in the textbook a system of healing, not just a bunch of extemporaneous facts. Not only is the textbook filled with facts, but also a system that tells you, instructs you, how you can have healing of anything that you're faced with. And as mentioned, the last 101 pages is a list of 486 examples. And those had all been published in the publications of the Christian Science Publishing Society up until 1910. I mean, there were tens of thousands of healings, but that's just a few of them that she selected. And of course, there have been tens, if not hundreds of thousands of healings in the, you know, since that time, in the last 116 years, since 1910. So if you want to have some tools, or one tool that will let you see proof of it, they're all verified healings. And they've been in the textbook since 1910. The second thing I want to mention is that the science that she refers to, the science of Jesus, of the healings of Jesus, that's what we teach in these prayer treatments. And it consists, just like the science of mathematics, it has the elements. In math, there are 10 digits, 0 through 9. In the system of divine metaphysics, there are 7 synonymous terms for God. In mathematics, there's 4 operators at the basic level of add, subtract, multiply, and divide. And with the system of divine metaphysics, the 4 operators are the Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. And we explain exactly what those are on the website. There's a button on the website that says Effective Healing. If you click on it, it tells you all of what I'm saying right now. And there are 4 levels. The 4 levels are on page 115 and 116 of the textbook. There's 3 levels of mortal mind and 1 of divine mind. All of the tools are there that you need on the website. We have a contact page, and you're invited to ask any question you want about the Bible, any of Mary Baker Eddy's writings, anything that is related to healing, you're welcome to ask about. And we tell you how we can communicate directly with each other, as opposed to having an email or something like that. Right now, it is April 30, Thursday, 2026, at 08:45 in the morning. The title of this is 1-7 Day. 1-7 means from number 1 to number 7 of the 7 synonymous terms have all been touched upon. And the primary thing is this is based on preventative treatment, which is a wonderful way to start the day. And this is only an example. Everyone is encouraged to be able to have their own prayer treatment. And of course, they're intended to be updated, you know, with a new prayer treatment, not updated, but, you know, with a new prayer treatment whenever you feel the need to protect yourself or if you're working on curing something. This is the end of this prayer treatment. Thank you for listening. The end.